You're listening to The World Cafe. I'm Talia Schlanger.
I'm a black man in a white world. I'm a black man in a white world. I'm a black man.
That's the voice of Michael Kiwanuka on a breakout single from his 2016 record, Love and Hate. And you can hear very clearly what he's singing there. I'm a black man in a white world. When Michael stands on stage and sings that song, he is staking a claim at a very personal space where his music, color, and identity intersect. And it's taken him a lifetime to get there. Michael was raised in the UK by Ugandan refugees. He is a Hendrix head who loves folk rock, but who the music biz has always wanted to pigeonhole as a soul artist. And in honor of Black History Month, I asked him to talk about his own history, about how it feels and what it means to stand and say, I'm a black man in a white world. Michael and I spoke over the phone, and I started by asking him to describe where he grew up.
Yeah, I grew up in London, in North London. And Muswell Hill is a really nice suburban town. Actually, a lot of musicians are from Muswell Hill, like the Kinks and stuff like that. You know, so it's got a nice history of music. But it's a middle-class town, you know, like kind of a village feel. And there weren't that many young black kids when I was there growing up. Not really now either. But I didn't have a horrible time growing up. It was a nice upbringing. But I guess when I got to the age of like 14 or 15, you look for something to relate to. And at that time, I realized that myself and my family were a little different. You know, our culture, or my mum and dad's culture, was completely different from the culture I knew in Muswell Hill. And that played a big part of who I am, you know, and I thought it would be interesting to sing about that, you know.
Yeah, and your parents are from Uganda originally, right? Why did they leave Uganda for London?
Yeah, they left Uganda. Well, at the time when they left Uganda, Idi Amin was president. He was a difficult president for Uganda at the time, kind of became a bit of a tyrant, which a lot of people know, quite widely reported. But the economy and the feel in Uganda was bad. He was kicking a lot of Indians and Goans out from the country, and wanted to keep it just Ugandans, you know. And because of that, the economy was suffering and opportunities were getting lost. So a lot of people decided to leave the country for better lives, you know, and better opportunities.
Yeah, and how did they fit in with the largely white community that was around them when you were a kid and growing up?
Yeah, we fitted in pretty well, you know, really. I mean, the main thing as a child growing up, what made me think about identity was the obvious thing of that my parents speak two languages, and their first language is Luganda, you know, a language that's spoken in Uganda around Kampala. And at the home, they'll speak that. And obviously at school, there's English. Now, I didn't learn my mum and dad's mother tongue. The reason being was that people in Muswell Hill weren't used to kids that spoke two languages that were bilingual by an early age. So often we would be, but my brother did, you know, so often we'd be put into like lower sets at school because we were slower at reading or like talking because we were learning two languages at the same time. So my mum decided to stop teaching us Luganda and just to teach us English. And when I got to my teens, I actually was upset about that, you know, because it meant that I couldn't, when cousins came around or sisters, my mum's sisters or my dad's brothers and sisters, they were speaking Luganda and my brother and I, we wouldn't understand. And when we visited Uganda, we wouldn't understand a lot of what people were saying. So I felt separate from Uganda, but then also a little bit separate from England and Muswell Hill, you know. So I felt like I towed a line of nowhere. And those kind of feelings influence black man in the white world, you know, being removed from like what you're, where maybe culturally you would be obviously supposed to be in, you know.
Yeah, towed the line to nowhere. That's poetry. who did you first identify with when you were a young budding musician? Who did you see out there and think, oh, you know, that's, I see myself in that musician?
It began with like rock and roll singers and like Kurt Cobain and grunge music and things. But the guy I really related to was probably Jimi Hendrix, because he played, main reason that he played rock and roll music, and he was a black artist, you know.
Black
growing up, it was strange because of where I grew up. I was into just guitar music, you know. But people sometimes would expect me to be into like hip hop or just 90s R&B. But I was like listening to like rock and roll, and that's for some reason that was the music that pleased my ears. And so I thought I was a bit of a weirdo because everyone, it was like white musicians in bands, and then Hendrix. I discovered Hendrix, and I was like, everything's okay. I can do it now, you know. I think there's something about when you're a kid, if you can relate to someone, you can relate to someone by what they do, but also physically who they are and like what they look like sometimes. And that's not the main thing, but I just think it's where, you know, we always like to see someone that we can relate to, almost give us the permission to, like, you know, I can do this too, you know.
That's it, the permission. And I read that when you were a little kid that you had assumed before you'd seen a picture of Jimi Hendrix that he was a white guy.
Yeah. Yes, because I didn't know, my parents didn't really listen to much music in the house. So I didn't know any bands until I went to school, and I would learn bands off people's bags. Basically, people used to write names of bands at the back of their bags in school, and they would have their bags and they'll put like Nirvana across it, or like NOFX, or Pennywise, like American punk bands, or like The Clash or stuff like that. And Hendrix was on people's bags. So I assumed he was like some guy that was like Joe Strummer or like Kurt Cobain. And I was like 12, and then he came on TV. I was like, oh, crazy, he's got like an afro and he's black, and I've got an afro and he's black, and I've just started playing guitar, and he plays like heavy guitar, and I was like, wow, cool, I'm just gonna continue doing it. It was huge. Like we recorded it on like VHS, and I just kept watching the, because it was a documentary, and it at the end it showed the Woodstock concert with the white Strat, and I just started playing guitar, and for my birthday got a cheap white Fender copy, and it had like a reverse headstock. Even though I'm not left-handed, it had the upside down headstock, because obviously Hendrix had the upside down headstock. So like I just, everything that he did, you know, I just wanted to just be him, you know.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Michael Kiwanuka, whose 2016 record Love and Hate is just a glorious example of genre-bending wonder. It's really beautiful, but it's not your first record. And when you set out, Michael, to make your debut home again in 2012, what was sort of the expectation from the labels that you're working with or management about you were supposed to sound like based on who you are?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because it was a similar experience to what I felt when I was in school, like talking to friends who found it weird that I liked rock, I found that there's an expectancy for like what you look like or whatever and if you look at someone, you'll be able to work out what kind of music they make, you know, because in a way it's true, because people express themselves through like clothes as well. So you know, the punk in the 70s, people kind of wore, it was like a uniform. So labels, you know, early on they were like, they just wanted me to do like soul music, you know, and I was like writing all these folk songs, so they were like waiting for, you know, the soul hit. So it was a similar feeling to like when people, you know, it's like, oh, again, I don't tick the box, you know, it's like I don't fulfill people's expectations. It's a frustrating thing, and that feeds into a song like Black Man in the White World. It's just, you know, plucking the courage to just be yourself, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering where that courage came from, or how you came to it. When you got down to writing your follow-up record, Love and Hate, did you consciously set out to do something different than you had done when you were making Home Again, and all those expectations were on you to be a soul guy?
Yeah, yeah. The irony is that I wanted this album to be more of a soul album than the first, because I was just into the sound of that music, and I wanted to stretch my voice, and just like, I just wanted to do something different from the first album. So the album for me was that. It was me finally being happy and okay with who I am, you know, and the songs and my lyrics on this album really are me going for that, you know. It's like, I'm going to say something even if it annoys you or not. And it's fun, you know, you let go, or like, I'm going to make a piece of music and it's going to be 11 minutes long, because you can. There's no real barrier, so that really informed the new record.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Michael Kiwanuka, and you just heard a piece of the symphonic opus that opens his record, Love and Hate, wailing Hendrix-style guitars, synth, choir, as he said just before you heard that piece of music, a sort of subversive take on how much you can do with music and how far you can go. So, Michael, there's that amazing nearly 10-minute opening song, and then we hear these rousing hand claps.
I've been low, I've been high.
And the tune Black Man in a White World. We've sort of traced your history and some of the thinking behind the message of that song, but I'm wondering if there was like an inciting incident or something that made you sit down and write that one in particular.
There wasn't something specific, but it was like, for me, that lyric, the first thing about that song that I came up with was the chorus. It was that hook, you know. It felt like a culmination to everything up until that point. Wanting to fit in so much, it was I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm a black man in white world. You know, I just don't care anymore. You know, I'm just, and it's not a bad thing. I'm not angry about that. It just so happens that, you know, I'm from Britain and I lived in Muswell Hill, and then might not fit into the box that people might expect straight away. And, you know, and I just thought, actually, that's cool, you know. I'm going to make the music I want, and it's fun. So it was almost like celebratory. But, you know, what was interesting was when I came out with it, I thought, initially when I was in the studio, I thought, well, I can't put that on an album, you know. I can't put that on a song. No.
Why? Why?
You know? Well, I just thought the lyric, it would just annoy people. You know, I thought people would just misunderstand me because it's so, like, abrasive, you know. Or it was just so clear. I'd never been so open and honest on a track before, so all the people that go to my gigs, there's like hardly any black people that come to my gigs anyway. Maybe it's always maybe like 5% of the gigs are black, if that. So I thought, I'll just imagine myself singing that song in a club or somewhere or venue, and just, I'm a black man in the white world, and people would just start throwing tomatoes at me or something. I started to think that would happen, or second guess the audience, which is not a good thing to do. And I've learned from that. But then as I was in the studio, there was an engineer, and he was like, helping, and that week nothing was like sounding very good, and it was a bit, I was just missing the mark, and the engineer, the kind of assistant engineer, was like, he looked really, really bored, and he was a white guy, and he just wasn't really interested in what we were doing. He went out for a cup of tea, I'd come up with that hook and I recorded it, and then he came back in and he started like moving his head a bit and like tapping his feet. So I was like, well, there's a physical reaction to it, and he seems to be kind of enjoying it, and he was like so not into what I was doing before. So I was like, well, he's kind of into it. So I just flat out asked him, I was like, well, what do you think about the song? Does this offend you? And he said, no, it sounds really cool. And I thought, great. And then I just kind of, that was it. So, yeah.
That was it. The board engineer was your license to just...
Yeah, I just asked him because I thought, well, you're white, you know, and does this offend you? Because the idea isn't to offend anyone. I'm not against anything. I'm just trying to be happy with myself, you know, and... But I definitely, before we released it, I definitely was nervous, and you know. But I'm pleased that I kept going.
Yeah, I imagine that Eureka moment must have been so amazing, because in songwriting, often we beat around the bush, and we have metaphors, and we have all these complicated ways of talking, like even outside of music, the complicated ways that we talk about race and you know, African American or Ugandan English maybe is what you like, but just to put it out there and just to say those words, I'm a black man in a white world, must have been very powerful. What did it feel like when you were nervous about the reactions that you get? What did it feel like the first time that you performed that song on stage of an audience?
Yeah, I mean, I was scared, you know, I was nervous, but it was like really exciting at the same time, which is like, I guess the whole point of life, I guess, if you have those moments, it's what you live for. But it is like, if there's trepidation and you're like, oh gosh, I don't know what what I've done, you know, it's just going to work out. I've got quite a mixed band in terms of race, so there's a couple of us that are black, and then about half-half, you know, so it's like no one seemed to really care in the band, so I thought that's good. Mm-hmm. I was even nervous to play it to the band, you know. And then when we played it at the first gig, I think the gig was in Berlin or something, it went down all right, you know. But the scariest thing was when it was first played on the radio in London, you know. And luckily, a station liked it, and I came in and had to do an interview about it because obviously of the lyric, and it was on quite a commercial station, so I thought, oh, here we go. It's going to be like, this is where I find out if people just hate me or not. And the response was amazing. People were so supportive, and whatever colour someone was, they just enjoyed it. And for me, it was like a real lesson into that actually being, putting yourself out there and being honest means so much to, one, yourself, but also as humans, we just like, that's the best way we can relate to each other is to just speak from the heart, you know?
That's a beautiful thing, yeah. You must have been surprised. Yeah, I guess you're saying that you were surprised by the overwhelming supportive reaction that first time. But the song's also bothered some people. I'm wondering if maybe that means it's working?
Yeah, I think so. And it's like, I mean, I would like to pretend that I was like, that's what I want, you know. But of course, I wanted people to like it, and I was nervous. But then after it happened, I remember, like, I thought of some of my, like, all the classic musicians that have inspired us, whether it's like Nina Simone or like Iggy Pop, these like legends, the music they made that just annoyed people. And I just think that if you're trying to make music for entertainment, but also at the same time as an art form, art should cause people to think and also provoke, you know. I think that's what the whole point of art is. So looking back after the point, I thought actually that was really cool. And I wish I thought that when I was going to put it out. I would love to pretend to say that, oh yeah, it's meant to be like that, but you know, I was nervous, but then looking back, I thought, I'm kind of glad I did that. It means that you're saying something.
Amen to that. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, it feels like, this song, where it was about claiming your identity, and then the lesson that it sounds like you've learned is to claim it even harder.
For me, it's about, the song is purely, about identity, and for me, the realization of how important it is to be comfortable with who it is that you are, and that is the beginning of everything for me. And actually, identity is so important to the human race, and we can see that now with what's happening in the world, is when that feels like it's being pushed or pulled in the wrong way, or someone's threatening who we are, that's where all the trouble for me starts, you know. And I just think we shouldn't take it lightly. So I think for me, the song was to encourage me to just be okay with who I am, and at that point, I can start enjoying life, you know?
Yeah. I have one more question for you. If you could go back in time and tell your little self when you're growing up in North London, this little guy who's not quite sure he fits in, if you could share one of the lessons that you learned about what it means to be a black man in a white world, what would you tell your little self?
Yeah, that's cool. I think I'll say to myself, you know, don't be so angry, you know, and it's okay to be different, you know, and you've got things going for you that way. That's what I'd say. I'd say, you know, it's not a bad thing to stand out a bit.
Let's listen to the song that we've been talking about. Here's Michael Kiwanuka, Black Man in a White World.
I'm in love, I'm still sad.
That is Black Man in a White World off Love and Hate by Michael Kiwanuka. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks for having me. It's been nice.
We look forward to having you tour America in the near future.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. We'll be right back on The World Cafe.